All right, morning, everybody. We're going to continue our discussion in Matthew 24, which is known as the Olivet Discourse. And last week, so to kind of give a recap from last week, so Jesus brings some of his disciples up on the Mount of Olives, and the primary thing that they're discussing is Christ's coming and the end of the age. And we talked about how that word for coming in the Greek is parousia, which means Jesus' physical presence and arrival at, when he comes at the second coming. And so then Jesus tells his disciples that they need to look out for deception in this time period, people using his name as a platform to deceive. And then he talks about some things, that events that lead up right before his coming, that he equates them with birth pains. And he says, you'll hear of wars, rumors of wars. You know, he says there'll be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places. And then he connects those events with persecution of his own disciples during that time. And you guys remember, he kind of lists three things that cause a falling away, or we talked about that Greek word being his disciples becoming snared at that point. You guys kind of, three things that you can think of that he lists that cause that falling away? Yep, deception from false teachers and false prophets that rise up.
Persecution from the outside and from within.
Persecution. And the last one? lawlessness. Remember we talked about how disobedience to God's command causes the love of God's people at that time to extinguish or draw cold. So, and then we talked about how in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, Paul actually lists two things that have to happen before our gathering together to Christ. And he says that the great falling away, and we talked about how that in Greek it's the great apostasy. And then Paul says, and the man of sin, the son of perdition, being revealed, which is the Antichrist. So we left off last week in verse 14, and now we're going into verse 15, which verse 15 is the abomination of desolation, which is that second part of 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, which Paul mentions the man of sin being revealed. And this event here marks the beginning of a certain point in what we call the tribulation. And it actually gives the exact amount of time from this event to when Christ will return. And we'll look at that here in a minute. So verse 15 starts off, Jesus gives another thing that we need to look for. And he says, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. Now, obviously, as we're sitting here and we're thinking about in context, since we talked about how Jesus has given all these commands throughout, you know, this chapter, you know, for instance, whoever reads, let him understand here is, you know, Jesus is pointing back to Daniel, making sure that his disciples understand what Daniel is speaking about with this abomination of desolation, so that we can know when this event happens and watch for it. Now, obviously, you know, this event, you know, we're living here. This is something that's going to take place in Jerusalem. So there's going to have to be TV involved or something for us to possibly be able to witness this live. Some of these things that Jesus mentions here is, you know, primarily for those people that are living, disciples of Christ who are living in that area when that event takes place. But I'm going to talk about going to some other passages that talk about in a larger scope for God's people that this event marks a certain period of time which the persecution is going to become even greater than it did before. So Jesus is drawing here out of Daniel chapter 11, where it mentions the abomination of desolation about the middle of the chapter. It's also in chapter 12. Now, Daniel 11 is primarily, a lot of that prophecy, if you read it, concerns what happened in 165 BC with a Syrian king named Antiochus Epiphanes. And he invaded Jerusalem, and some of the Jews at that time rebelled, kind of known as the Maccabean Revolt. But he basically invaded Jerusalem, desecrated God's temple. He offered swine as a sacrifice. He erected an altar or an image to Zeus. And all that, and actually, you know, since we're in Hanukkah right now, This is the event that caused Hanukkah after the Maccabees beat back the Syrian invasion, and they rededicated God's temple. And actually, interestingly enough, in Luke chapter 1, Jesus was actually, today is the fourth day of Hanukkah, and Jesus was actually conceived in Luke chapter 1 today on this day of Hanukkah. But anyway, so Antiochus Epiphanes basically desecrated the temple and performed the abomination of desolation, which is offering that basically in the Holy of Holies, he desecrated it and defiled it and offered a sacrifice that was not according to God's commands. So when Jesus says here, you know, when he's pointing us back to Daniel 11, when this happened, you know, he's telling us that something that's going to happen to, you know, telling his disciples, something that's going to happen in the future from this point, when Jesus is telling his disciples this, is going to be the exact, it's going to be the same thing. And Daniel 11 is kind of, you know, yes, it deals with a lot of the prophecy that happened in 165 BC with Antiochus Epiphanes, but it also, about the middle of the chapter, it kind of switches to where it's talking about the Antichrist, and it's talking about prophecy that's yet to be fulfilled. So Jesus is telling us that what happened in the event with Antiochus Epiphanes and the Jews in the temple is the same thing that's going to happen in the future. So obviously that is going to require a rebuilt temple, right? Because in order for there to be an abomination of desolation, there has to be something that happens in God's temple. So right now there's not a temple right now where that's taking place, correct? But if you guys turn with me to Revelation 11, something that's going to happen, you know, in pretty soon here, I think, is there's going to be a rebuilt temple in Jerusalem. And there's going to be sacrifices offered again. Revelation 11, verse 1. Then I was given a reed like a measuring rod. And the angel stood, saying, "Rise and measure the temple of God, the altar, and those who worship there." So notice how it's talking, he's saying to the angel's telling John, measure the temple and the altar and those who are worshiping there. "But leave out the court, which is outside the temple, and do not measure it, for it has been given to the Gentiles. And they will tread the holy city underfoot for 42 months. And I will give power to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy 1,260 days clothed in sackcloth." And then it talks about some of the things these two witnesses do and the powers that they have. Now, so this event here with the two witnesses, or these two men that are going to come that are known as, you know, these two prophets that are going to come on the scene here prior to Jesus' arrival, they're actually going to, they're going to aid in the construction of this temple. In the Old Testament, the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, you have these two prophets, Zechariah and Haggai, who basically aided in the construction of the temple at that time, which was the temple that was destroyed, Solomon's temple, which was destroyed by the Babylonians. When the Persians absorbed the Babylonian Empire, Cyrus the Great, he gave the decree to rebuild that temple. And Haggai and Zechariah did the same thing, where the surrounding nations were trying to keep the temple process from actually the temple from being rebuilt, and those two prophets basically kept the nations at bay and helped for that process to continue. And that's basically what's going to happen here with these two men that are going to show up, that they're basically going to be given supernatural power from God to allow that temple to be rebuilt and for the sacrificial system to be reinstated, which also is going to require a priesthood to come about, which in the Old Testament, a prophet would anoint a priest in order to be one of God's rightful priests in his temple. And so those two witnesses are going to anoint the priesthood, and the temple services are going to begin again. Now notice how it says 260 days clothed in sackcloth, or 1,260 days clothed in sackcloth. So basically, you guys have probably heard the 7 years tribulation, right? It comes out of Daniel 9, which we're not gonna go into Daniel 9 today. Maybe in another separate Bible study, we'll go into details of Daniel 9. But Daniel 9 gives this 70-week prophecy of these years, and it's basically years. It's a prophetical number of years that God has planned for the nation of Israel and certain promises that he's made. And there's, of that prophecy, there's 7 years left in that prophecy that is still yet to be fulfilled. And the first 3.5 years of that last 7 years is going to be the two witnesses here with the temple being rebuilt, and they're going to be prophesying, and the services will take place. Now, notice here in Revelation 11, verse 7, it says, when they finish their testimony, the beast that ascends out of the bottomless pit will make war with them, overcome them, and kill them. Now, the beast that descends out of the bottomless pit is basically the Antichrist. So these two witnesses for 3.5 years are going to prophesy and while the temple services are being conducted. And then at the end of their testimony, the Antichrist is going to kill them. Well, this is the reason why this is important is because when those two witnesses are killed, here where it says that the beast that ascends out of the bottomless pit, ascends here is a present participle, meaning at the time that the beast is ascending out of the bottomless pit and kills the two witnesses is when this abomination of desolation back in Matthew chapter 24 is going to take place. So the Antichrist is going to kill these two witnesses, and basically the people are going to follow after him because obviously the two witnesses are given supernatural power during that time, and if he's able to overcome them, that kind of gives, it kind of puts an authority on him that people will recognize and follow after. Now, back in Matthew 24, so this abomination of desolation is going to be the Antichrist. Just as Antiochus Epiphanes went into the temple back in that time period, the Antichrist, because Antiochus Epiphanes is really, he's kind of a prophetic type of the Antichrist. So the Antichrist is going to go into the temple and perform an abominable act in the Holy of Holies as well. Now, if you go, I'll just go there. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, when we talked about, you know, Paul saying the great falling away and the man of sin being revealed, right after he talks about the man of sin being revealed, he says the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. So notice here that Paul says that this son of perdition, or you know what, we this character we call the Antichrist, is going to sit in the temple of God, and he's using the temple of God as a legit, that temple is going to be of God, and what's happening there is going to be approved by God. Not what the Antichrist is doing, but the construction of the temple and the reinstitution of sacrifices with the nation of Israel is going to be something that God is using during that time period. And now, when the Antichrist enters the temple here, you know, sitting in the temple of God, it's interesting that in Revelation chapter 13, it talks about the Antichrist sets this image up, and it's given through satanic power. The image is given the power to speak. It's kind of a strange thing when we look at it, but if you look at Mark 13's account of the abomination of desolation, it says the same thing. It says, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, and then instead it says, Mark says, standing where it ought not. Jesus uses the neuter pronoun, meaning an object. So basically the Antichrist is going to go into the temple and probably erect this image that Revelation 13 speaks of inside the temple that's going to be this abomination of desolation. Go ahead.
When you're
there. Yeah, go ahead. That's fine.
When Christ was crucified, the curtain separating the Holy of Holies was rent in two, was ripped down. Someone said that thing was like 6 inches thick. Interesting, in Tim's book, The Time of the End, I read that the Talmud mentions a historical point that certain bad omens began occurring after the crucifixion. Until 70 AD, for those 40 years, he mentions four of them. Bad omens began occurring at the temple. I assume that's a testimony to the failure of the priesthood and the rebellious nature of the leadership, and the fact that the atonement had been finally fulfilled. It is interesting. There is somewhat of a conflict, and a lot of us are thinking about it while you're going through this, about the failure of that system, the fact that Christ made the atonement, and now we're going to rebuild the temple and do what? You know.
Yeah, it's kind of a strange concept for us to think about with the temple and sacrifices and all this stuff happening, but there's some promises throughout the Old Testament that God has made to the nation of Israel collectively, okay? And some of those promises, basically, you know, like you said, Dad, the priesthood, the religious leadership at the time of Jesus, they rejected Christ, and which was primarily why, you know, Jesus said some certain things to them about, like in Matthew 23, in the previous chapter here, you know, he said, you know, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you know, you've stoned the prophets that have sent to you. I wanted to gather together, you know, as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you're not willing. And then he says, your house has left you desolate, for you shall see me no more until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. And when Jesus says, your house has left you desolate, basically was a prophecy of the coming destruction in AD 70 of that temple at that time. But he says, you shall see me no more until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. So, and this theme is kind of prominent throughout the Gospels, where Jesus is talking, he's basically referring back to prophecy in the Old Testament, particularly in the book of Zechariah, that talks about this kind of national repentance awakening that happens at the moment of Christ's return with the nation of Israel collectively. Zechariah, I think it's 13 or 14, talks about how they will look on the one whom they have pierced and moan, and basically it's because these promises that God has made to the nation of Israel collectively, you know, God is going to, and the 70-week prophecy in Daniel 9, it pertains, if you read Daniel 9, it pertains particularly, you know, Daniel's people and specific certain things that deal with the nation of Israel. Now, and that was a spider. But Paul also talks about this in Romans 9 through 11, where he says that even though the nation of Israel as a whole, you know, the leadership as a whole rejected him, they're still elect for the sake of the fathers. Meaning, it's not that every single Israelite among the nation of Israel is going to be saved, you know, or has certain benefits right now that we don't. But it's the nation of Israel, right prior to Christ's return, he's going to do something with them collectively that's going to aid in their national repentance. So that when Paul says the deliverer will come from Zion, then all Israel shall be saved. And I think it's in Romans chapter 11. So this reconstruction of the temple and this anointing of the priesthood and this whole process is going to take place is something that God is doing primarily with the nation of Israel in order to provoke their repentance. Because when Christ comes back, he's going to basically deliver them from the Antichrist and from all the oppression that he's given them, and it's going to transition into the millennial kingdom. So
it'll be. I'm sorry. It'd be interesting when I was thinking about this. This is actually a while back. You know, all this stuff is going to be happening in the Middle East, and it's like sitting here in America. You know, how it's interesting to think on about how we're going to see all this go down. Are we just going to be sitting here watching it on
CNN,
CNN or Fox News? You know, like, is it going to be broadcasted, you know, throughout, you know, the news media? I don't know.
Yeah, and
for how long, you know, will we be sitting here? Will it be, you know, be broadcasted? You know, are we going to watch the Abomination of Desolation happen on live television? I mean,
it's possible.
So, getting back to my main point, the Lord's got a purpose here with these symbols, and he's going to tolerate some things that probably are in somewhat of error to promote to actually empathize with those people and turn them.
Yeah, it has no salvific value. It has no. The things that God is going to be doing with the temple and the sacrifices, and it's basically a reinstatement of the law of Moses for that 7-year period. Okay, but it's not in the sense of like, oh, they don't need Christ, they don't need to enter into covenant relationship through the new covenant. It's primarily a way for these Jews to get at them in order for them to embrace the Messiah when he comes in order to save them. Now,
they never really did either.
No, yeah.
Even under
yeah.
Jerusalem before, it was more for them to govern them and to guide them, you know, to lead them to, you know, to understand that they needed a Messiah. Even Job talks about that, you know, he needed a Savior, you know.
Yeah, well, and Hebrews deals with this, you know, extensively in, you know, in Hebrews 10, where Paul says it's not possible that the blood of bulls and goats can take away sins. So just because they're doing sacrifices and stuff, I know it's a weird thing in our minds because we were never, you know, Israelites. We didn't see that whole process. It's kind of a strange thing for us to think about. But it's not that that is atoning for their sin. It's the same way that it worked in the Old Covenant, where it was by faith, it was by promises that God gave that they were responding to, that God was accepting them. And that's what this is going to be, you know. I mean, even the apostles, while the temple was still standing before it was destroyed in AD 70, they went to the feasts, which have sacrifices. They offered, Paul in Acts talks about Paul offering a sacrifice. So it's not, we shouldn't think it too strange that there are sacrifices that are going to be offered and things like that. But again, it's not for their salvation that, you know, it's a way around Christ or anything. It's all geared towards bringing that you know, collective nation to repentance when Christ returns. And in Daniel 9:27, it talks about this covenant that God makes, and I'll just read it here off my notes. It says, "In 1 week shall strengthen the covenant with many, and in the midst of the week my sacrifice and drink offering shall be taken away, and on the temple shall be the abomination of desolations, and at the end of time an end shall be put to the desolation." Now, this is reading from the Greek version, so most of our translations don't have the personal pronoun, my sacrifice and offering. But this covenant here that talks about he will strengthen the covenant with many is basically, it's a strengthening of a former covenant that he's speaking of. And so what's happening is God is re-strengthening, you know, the law of Moses, aspects of the law of Moses, with many or with the nation of Israel for that time period. And then when he says, my sacrifice and offering shall be taken away, he's referring to the abomination of desolation that Jesus is speaking of here in Matthew 24. So, and notice, you know, it's in the midst of the week. So he's strengthening the covenant with the nation of Israel collectively in the middle of the week, or in the middle of that 7 years, the abomination of desolation happens, which when we went to Revelation 11, talked about how the two witnesses would prophesy for 3.5 years or 1,206 days, and then they would be killed, and then you would have the abomination of desolation, and then you have a latter 3.5 years of that 7 years, which is when the Antichrist rules. Which Daniel 11, which talks about the abomination of desolation, says that the 3.5 years will be from the time that is set up in the temple to basically Antichrist being removed from power. There'll be 3.5 years. So the reason why Jesus is giving this event is because it's a time indicator, as I mentioned before, that once we see this, I mean, we can pretty much mark our watches. We got 3.5 years and that sky is going to be split open and Christ is going to return. Now, the other thing, too, I wanted to just touch on really quick because, you know, some of it, we've talked about it before, about some of these teachings out there that interpret these events as already occurred, you know, we've run into some people that hold those particular viewpoints. Now, like, some people will say that the abomination of desolation is the event in AD 70 with the destruction of the temple by the Romans. Now, that's really an impossibility if you think about Jesus commanding his disciples when this prophetic event happens. Jesus told his disciples to flee, okay? And we're going to get into these next verses here in a minute. Now, in the historic event of AD 70, you had the Roman armies. They approached the city in AD 67, a couple years before they actually destroyed the city and the temple. Now, Christians at that time that were living in Jerusalem, they were all aware of Jesus' prophecies that he talked about the destruction of the temple, primarily in Luke chapter 21.
And that accounts in Luke.
Yeah, Luke 21. We're going to go there here in a minute because it's important to look at the distinction in Luke 21 between the Olivet Discourse and Mark 13 and Matthew 24.
It's talking about two different things.
Yeah, we're going to go there here because it's important, because it's probably going to come up if you run into people that hold this particular viewpoint. Now, this Jewish historian named Josephus, he was actually at the battle and he was watching it take place, and he gave a historical account of the battle. And when the Romans first approached the city, that's when all the Christians got out, because they knew of Luke 21, which we're going to go here in a minute, of what Jesus said. Now, what happened then after that, before the city even got invaded and the temple was destroyed, is they built a wall around the whole city and basically completely blocked it off. And Josephus talks about how there was cannibalism, there was horrible things that took place because of the starvation that was going on. But eventually then in AD 70, they sacked the city, destroyed the temple. They didn't perform any kind of they didn't perform anything like putting a giant pagan altar in the temple or anything like that, like Antiochus Epiphanes did, you know, back in, you know, 165 BC. So it can't really be the abomination. It can't be what Jesus is referring here. Jesus is referring to something that is yet to take place.
Is the point you're talking about the one that, like, it's already happening, the tribulation now, the 7-year period?
That
believes that, and I was like, well, it's not happening now, it's in the future, but how do we know when it's in the future and it's not happening now?
It actually is. He might be, it's called preterism, and it basically, you know, refers, basically all this stuff has already happened. I mean, even to the point where Christ's return
7-year period
has already happened.
There are varying degrees, too.
Within the viewpoint of taking these prophecies as something that's happened, there's all kinds of different sects that you could say or ideas. It's particularly a viewpoint called preterism where they're interpreting these things as though they've already happened, which is really bad when you think about it, because, you know, Some amillennials will also interpret this passage, but they kind of hold a double standard
in order to spiritualize.
They hold a double standard because they'll say, oh, this abomination of desolation was AD 70, you know, but it's Christ is still coming back, you know. But if you're consistent, you have to say that Christ, return has already happened, like we get to in verse 29, mm-hmm. because it's included in the same discourse. But flip over with me to Luke 21, because I just want to show you the distinction. So, anyways, my point is that if Jesus' command was legit, and the abomination of desolation that we just talked about in Matthew 24 is actually applicable to the AD 70 thing, then his command is worthless, because think about it. If Jesus said, when you see the abomination of desolation, then flee, right? Mm-hmm. Well, the city was walled off. So when they finally, when the Romans went in, there's no way they could possibly obey Jesus' command. So there's no way that Matthew 24 can be referring to the AD 70 invasion.
They were sieging it long before.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Josephus talks about, I mean, the siege went on a long time because the Jews were fighting back pretty bad. And he gives a real descriptive account of the Romans, again and again approaching the city and the Jews fighting them back. But so Luke 21, and like I said, I think in the beginning of this study, many people think Luke 21 is included in the Olivet, that it is the Olivet Discourse that we're talking about in Matthew 24 and Mark 13. But like I said, Luke 21 should be called the Great Temple Discourse, because it was given on the temple grounds at a different location and time than what we're going through in Matthew 24. Now, let's go Luke 21, verse 7. So they asked him, saying, so Jesus' disciples asked him, saying, now, they're in the temple, and teacher, but what will these things be, and what sign will there be that these things are about to take place? And again, Jesus had just talked about in verse 6 the destruction of the temple and the stones, all being thrown down. Now Jesus, the thing that's hard about this chapter is that some of the portions of this chapter do pertain to the second coming. But I'll point something out in one of the verses here, that while Jesus is talking about his return in some of these verses, he kind of takes a quick break from that and tells them something of a prophecy that, of the AD 70 invasion, okay? So he says, take heed, and in verse 8, he tells his disciples, take heed that no one you may not be deceived, which again, sounds like what we've been reading in Matthew 24, for many will come in my name, saying, I am he. The time has drawn near, therefore do not go after them. But when you hear of wars and commotions, do not be terrified, for these things must come to pass, but the end will not come immediately. And, you know, here he's talking about the end of the age. So he is addressing certain things that pertain to his second coming here. And then he says, same thing we've been reading in Matthew 24 in verse 10, nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom, and there will be great earthquakes in various places, famines and pestilences, and there will be fearful sights and great signs from heaven. Now notice in verse 12 here, but before all these things, okay, so this is a very important clause here, because Jesus is giving his disciples in these previous verses some things that pertain to the second coming. But now notice he says, okay, but I'm going to take a break here for a minute. Before all these things, and then he goes, but before these things, he says, they will lay their hands on you and persecute you, delivering you up to the synagogues and prisons. You'll be brought before kings and rulers for my name's sake. But it will turn out for you as an occasion for testimony. Therefore, settle in your hearts not to meditate beforehand on what you will answer. For I will give you a mouth and wisdom, which all your adversaries will not be able to contradict or resist. You will be betrayed even by parents and brothers, relatives and friends, and they will put some of you to death, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. But not a hair on your head shall be lost. By your patience possesses your souls. Now, notice in verse 20, Jesus says, but when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation is near. So, what is Jesus talking about the AD 70 invasion here? Because this is still included in his, hey, before all these things, this. Okay? When you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation is near. In which the early Christians recognized this, because Josephus even talks about in his account how the early Christians knew of Jesus' prophecies and they got out. Okay? Which means that they, you know, they took heed to Jesus' prophecies and they obeyed the things that Jesus said, you know, in these prophecies. So then verse 21, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains, let who is are in the midst of the depart, and let not those who are in the country enter her. For these are the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. But woe to those who are pregnant, nursing babies in those days, for there will be great distress in the land and wrath upon this people. And they will fall by the edge of the sword and be led away captive into all nations. And Jerusalem will be trampled by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled.
So is 21 now back to when they are allowed to flee to the hills?
No, well, it does. So it does have similar language to Matthew 24, okay? But again, something you need to realize with prophecy in the scripture is that, you know, just because you might have, you know, some similar language or types doesn't mean that, you know, it's always exactly the same, you know, same thing. So because Jesus is talking about, you know, at the AD 70 invasion, let those flee, you know, it's going to be hard for people that are, you know, women that are nursing and stuff, you know, doesn't mean that when Jesus is talking about it, which we're going to go to that verse next here, that's the exact same event. Because in verse 24, when it says they will fall by the edge of the sword and be led away captive into all nations, again, he's talking about Jerusalem being destroyed by the Romans and the Jews being led away captive in all nations. And Josephus actually talks about this, how there were so many captives in Jerusalem that they couldn't even sell all of them. They couldn't even get, you know, they were trying to get rid of all of them and they couldn't even, there's just so many. Because there were so many people in the city during that time because they were gathered for the Feast of Passover and First Fruits, like there was an extraordinary amount of people that were in the city when the Romans invaded and locked it off because of the feasts. So, and then the last part of verse 24 where it says, and Jerusalem will be trampled by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. Well, that's the gospel going out to the Gentiles. Okay, the times of the Gentiles is considered the time period in which God is going to, you know, extend, you know, his covenant to the Gentiles, and when the gospel is going out to all the nations, and it's basically saying Jerusalem will be under, you know, will be run over and basically occupied by foreign nations, you know, until, you know, this time period where the gospel is going out to the nations comes to completion. So, you guys have any questions about that? But it's an important distinction to make, that Jesus says before all these things, because then in Luke 21, verse 25, he says, and there will be signs in the sun, the moon, the stars, and on the earth distress of nations and perplexity and the sea and the waves roaring. And he goes into his second coming, okay? So it's almost like he takes a break, talks about some things that pertain to the AD 70 invasion, then he goes back talking about his second coming. But the reason why it's important to make that distinction is because you know, preterists, as we talked about, or people that hold that these prophecies have already been completed, will go to Luke 21 and they'll show you, hey, this is the same discourse and Jesus is saying this, and it's hard to get around saying, you know, oh, maybe that is talking about the 80-70 thing if you don't know that Jesus, you know, basically breaks it up in that great temple discourse with a portion of it referring to the Roman invasion in 80-70. So, yeah.
It's curious, verse 16 and 17 talks about they'll be killed. And then in 17 it says, it's 18 it says, but not a hair on your head will be lost.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. Basically, we're going to be archived into the mind of God for future reference, i.e. resurrection.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that whole thing we talked about last week with, you know, willing to give up our lives if it means, you know, obtaining immortality and resurrection.
The other thing interesting is God always is going to make his notifications. It's kind of funny that Hollywood loves making disaster movies. It's almost like they almost pray to the dark God. They wish so bad something catastrophic globally will happen so it will prove the Bible's not true. Asteroids hitting the earth.
Yeah. Anything but a Jewish man coming to reign over the
earth. Let's eliminate anything but that. You know, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. So let's go back to Matthew 24. Verse 16. So this abomination of desolation happens, which is going to take place in a temple that's to be built here in the future in Jerusalem. And Jesus says, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down to take anything out of his house. And let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. So now, you know how, Nate, you talked about, you know, this event, we're going to see it on TV or whatnot while we're here, you know. You know, these things that Jesus is saying here in verse 16 and 17, obviously it primarily pertains to those who witness the event in Jerusalem happening, that they need to flee to they need to get out of that location. But there's an application for God's people as a whole. In Revelation chapter 12, it talks about this angelic battle that takes place between Michael and Satan. And it talks about Satan being cast down to the earth and all his angels with him, okay? And it says that he's cast to the earth and he has a short time, which refers to the 3.5 years, you know, that latter half of the tribulation that he has. And he's cast to the earth, and it says the primary purpose for that is to persecute God's people. He goes after God's people, okay? And then it says when Satan's cast down and he starts going after God's people, it talks about this woman, you know, these two women. You know, and one of the women is represented by the church or God's people as a whole. And the woman flees into the wilderness to a place that's prepared by God for her. And she's nourished and fed for 1260 days, or that 3.5 years of the last 3.5 years of the tribulation. Now, that woman, you know, is pretty much considered all of God's people. So for us, the reason why this will have, you know, direct application is because this abomination of desolation also marks a time period where the persecution will be at its highest point during the tribulation, because Satan's coming down. There's going to be supernatural persecution, basically, for God's people during this time. And we talked about Isaiah 26 last week, but I'm going to touch on it again because this concept of fleeing for God's people is in the Old Testament, and it's also in a couple other places here. As we'll look at in the New Testament. But we Isaiah 26:20, we talked about last week, where it says, come, my people, enter your chambers and shut your doors behind you. Hide yourself, as it were, for a little moment until the indignation is past. For behold, the Lord comes out of his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. The earth will also disclose her blood and will no more cover her slain. Now, I mentioned last week that the come here is in the Greek version is go in the active voice, meaning go, my people, you know, enter your chambers, or enter the when the woman flees into the wilderness and is protected by God. There's going to be this supernatural protection that God, you know, performs with his people during this time, where from this supernatural persecution that is going on. Now, see where it says, hide yourself, as it were, for a little moment. This little moment here is, it's a, in the Greek, it's Mikran Hassan Hassan. And the other place this appears is in Paul's epistle to the Hebrews, where he tells them to, you know, it's in Hebrews 10:37, or around there. He says, you know, do not cast away your confidence, which has great reward. And he says, you have need of endurance, so that after you've done the will of God, you may receive the promise. And then he says, for he who is coming will come and will not tarry. Okay, he says, he who is coming will come and will not remain long. And then he says, the just shall live by faith, but the one who draws back, my soul has no pleasure in him. So he's actually, Paul is actually quoting from Isaiah 26 here, because when he says, for he who is coming will come and will not tarry, you know, will come and will not remain long, is basically what it says, is this same Greek phrase. And it's basically, it's referring to the Antichrist duration and time of his persecution of God's people during the latter portion of the last 7 years. And, you know, because you notice he says right after he says that in Hebrews 10, he says, but we are not, you know, of the withdrawal unto damnation, but of faith unto the procurement of life, is what he literally says. Some of our translations may say, you know, we don't draw back to perdition, but are of the saving of the soul. Because Paul is referring to this time period that the Antichrist comes, and he's exhorting those Hebrews, he's exhorting the God's people to not withdraw at this time period, like Jesus talked about, you know, with the great falling away in the early chapters of Matthew 20, or early verses of Matthew 24. Now, the other place that this idea appears is in Habakkuk 2:1, which, when Jesus says, you know, where it says, whoever reads, let him understand. Habakkuk 2, the prophet Habakkuk says in Habakkuk chapter 2, now Habakkuk chapter 1, he's describing the Antichrist and some of the things that the Antichrist is doing, and Habakkuk is kind of, he's crying out for this injustice that's being done to God's people, and he's like basically crying to God for justice. And God tells him in chapter 2, he tells Habakkuk, write the vision clearly onto a writing tablet, so that the one reading these things may take flight, which is the same concept we've been talking about with the woman fleeing into the wilderness. For the vision is still yet for the appointed time, and it shall rise in the end and not in vain. If he should tarry, wait for him, for he will surely come and will not remain long. Which is, again, what we talk about in Hebrews 10, that is this Antichrist duration, this short time that the Antichrist is going to have dominion over and persecution of God's people. Now, do you guys have any questions about that? Now, that version that I was reading out of Habakkuk is from the Greek version again. So it might read a little different than your versions. But Jesus is quoting, you know, this stuff in Matthew 24 here is to emphasize that this stuff that's coming out of the Old Testament as well. And it's not just, you know, something that's New Testament teaching. So back to Matthew 24. Oh, and also in Luke 21, the latter portions where we talked about pertain to the second coming. You know, Jesus tells his disciples, watch and pray that you may be counted worthy to flee all these things that come to pass and stand before the Son of Man. So again, you find this concept of God's people, you know, fleeing at this point in time during the Antichrist's persecution, and be able to stand before the Son of Man when he returns. So we left off in verse 19 of Matthew 24, where it says, but woe to those who are pregnant and those who are nursing babies in those days, and pray that your flight may not be in the winter or on the Sabbath. So obviously, it's pretty, I mean, you know, the reason why God's people, hold on a second. Sorry. So the reason why it's going to be hard to move about on the Sabbath, you know, if you live around Jerusalem, is because things, you know, transportation is shut down, things like that. And for women who are have newborns, you can obviously in this time period see why that would be an issue, which is why in 1 Corinthians 7, Paul actually addressed the Corinthians about some of these issues pertaining to marriage and all this. And it kind of sounds strange. You know, Paul is telling them it's better to remain single as I am. If you don't understand that he's talking about in the context of, you know, the Corinthians wrote him a letter and he's saying, you know, hey, concerning the things you wrote to me, you know, here's what I'm telling you. Paul's referring to, you know, marital issues and things like that that's going to take place during the tribulation, and why he's giving them some of the advice that he gives them. Now, verse 21 in Matthew 24 says, "For then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor shall ever be. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved, but for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened." So this verse 21 here, where it talks about, "For then there'll be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the time, world until this time," he's quoting directly out of Daniel chapter 12, which Daniel chapter 12 talks about Michael the archangel standing up during this time period, and then it talks about, you know, it'll be the worst time period or that has ever been on the earth. And you know, verse 22, you know, he says, because unless these days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. So it's pretty serious, God saying that it's going to be so heavy during this latter portion of the tribulation that if it were allowed to continue on and or Antichrist was allowed to continue to reign and rule and do what he was going to do, that, you know, no flesh would be saved. And this is actually, remember I talked about the seals in the earlier verses of Matthew 24. This no flesh being saved is actually the opening of the fourth seal, which I forgot to add last week, that the opening of the fifth seal is the persecution of God's people, when it says they will deliver you up to persecution and kill you for my name's sake, is the fifth seal. So, all right, so do you guys have any questions about...
It's interesting that he uses the word, I don't know, the word flesh would be saved, you know, rather than he incorporates the physical body as a whole, rather than what most people would think, you know, no soul would be saved.
Yeah. It's going to be... You know, it's not just going to be the Antichrist's persecution of why no flesh is saved. It's because there's going to be environmental catastrophes and
water being ruined, which
need
water warmly, things like that. You know, that's going to wipe out huge amounts of the population.
Science marvels at how fragile the whole thing is. Anyway, with cosmic events, it could just snuff us out. So many. Ideological agents that could just wipe out the whole human population quite easily with some mutation. There's just a lot of stuff that you look at logically that makes it a fragile system. It's interesting, though, that God, like I said, he's going to slowly turn the entire human population so they have to see him.
Yeah.
And what he's going to do.
Yeah. So then verse 23 talks about, says, "Then if anyone says to you," you know, we have more commands here given by Jesus to his disciples, "Look, here is the Christ," or "there," do not believe it. Jesus says, "Do not believe it, for false Christs and false prophets will rise and show great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. See, I have told you beforehand." So, you know, so something that's going to happen during this time period is false comings, you know, false things that are going to appear to manifest themselves as the return of Christ. Okay? And notice that he says that these false Christs and false prophets rise up, and their intention is to deceive, if possible, even the elect. Now, do some of you guys have the King James Version? It says that in the King James Version, it says, if it were possible, even the elect, kind of hinting at the idea that it's not really possible for them to deceive the elect, but that's not, the grammar in the Greek doesn't imply that at all.
Total bias.
It's very biased because, you know, first of all, why is Jesus telling, you know, see, I told you these things beforehand. Look for this stuff. I'm warning you this, but it's something that can't happen. Okay. It won't affect you. You know, that's really that interpretation is absurd. But not to mention that the Greek, where it says if possible in the Greek, it uses this conditional particle, which is a, which means if, and then it uses this adjective, which is dunatos, and dunatos means power, ability, capacity, strength. It lends more to the ability or capacity to do something. So literally it says, if able, you know, if these false prophets and doing miracles, if they're able to deceive even the elect. And the reason why that's so is like, I looked up this Greek, the conditional particle A with dunatos in the New Testament and other places where, you know, that same construction happens, and it never refers to something that's not possible. I mean, it is a condition, but it's something that very likely could be possible. For instance, in Luke chapter 14, Jesus tells his disciples, hey, if you're going to really follow me, you know, you need to do this. And he tells them to consider, some of the things that before they follow him, to make sure they want to be his followers. And he gives this example, and he says, of a king going to war with another king, you know, does he not first sit down and decide whether he is able to go against, you know, with 1,000 of his troops, another king who has 2,000? And he says whether he is able is what is this same Greek construction here in Matthew 24. Now, obviously, it's not impossible for the king to go against another king. It's whether or not he has the right tactics and resources to do so. You know, and it's the same thing throughout other places where you find this Greek construction in Acts 20. Paul sails past Ephesus because he's saying that he's hurrying to be at Jerusalem, if possible, on the day of Pentecost. So, you know, it's possible for Paul to make it there. It's just whether or not his traveling plans, are...
But there's so many other conditional verses, you don't need to know the Greek. Matthew 24:13. There's a but verse. There's your but verse.
Yeah.
I call it a but verse.
Why?
Matthew 24:13.
What?
Oh, but yeah. He who endures to the end shall be saved.
I know. It's
which implies that if you doesn't.
Implies somebody won't, right? I mean, I'm not stupid. I mean,
if you don't endure to the end, you will not be saved.
Well, and Daniel 7:25, in the Greek version of the Old Testament, says, it's speaking of the Antichrist, and it says that he shall speak words against the highest, and the saints of the highest he shall deceive. So, you know, it's pretty strong indication that, you know, if if the demonic deception, you know, if Satan's planned it well enough and it's, you know, put, you know, God's people in positions where they're set up, then there's a likely chance that deception will happen, which is why Jesus says, hey, you know, I'm telling you these things beforehand so you know it and you don't fall prey to that deception. Looking at time here, we're just about at time as far as I want to go today. I thought we were going to get a little bit farther, but that's okay. As long as we're going through this stuff highlighting the things that we need to look at here. So we left off here in verse 26. We will halt there at verse 26, and we'll continue that next week, or some of us will be gone, so maybe the week after. You guys have any questions before we stop here? No? All right.